Welcome to another edition of Father Time, the comedic reference guide to all things dadding. I am joined, as always, by my stellar producer, sound engineer, and the voice of reason, Mr. Andy Lerner. Hi, Andy.
How are you?
Good. How are you today?
I'm happy.
Well, that's all that really counts. We have a fun one today. You're gonna love this, Andy. This is you guys don't know each other yet, but you're gonna know this very soon. My guest today is a former touring pro for golf, who is now he is the golf pro to the stars. And you also teach some B level or C or D level celebrities, such as myself. That's how I know about you, because this is my golf instructor. But today your claim to fame is as a father to a beautiful 17-year-old daughter, Nicolette.
17, and it's scary how fast this went.
And she's shockingly beautiful.
Well.
I always do that. My producer's like, you know, you have to say the actual name of your guest, not just the name of his daughter. My guest is Mr. Ron Del Barrio. You can find him at rdbgolftips.com.
That's correct.
I found you because I was watching Jim Brown hit balls, and Larry David, I think, was watching hit balls, and Rob Riggle, and you were teaching all these guys, and I was like, I saw that you were hitting very well, and so I took some lessons with you, and you have made me a better golfer, but it's only so good I can get.
Well, I mean, as we've discussed during the lessons, that you have to practice and you have to work on it. Nothing ever happens, you know. Especially
what's funny is I took a month off, and the other day I shot an 81 at Les Robles.
So take 3 months off, you make the tour.
That's me. Is that the case?
Right. That's everybody.
I feel like that's how it works.
Paralysis through analysis. Everyone does the same thing.
Yeah, you are a golf pro. Talk a little bit about, because, dude, I mean, most of my friends, that's all we want to do is play golf.
It's golf, sure.
And you probably are so sick of it by now.
You know, recently I've been playing maybe now once or twice every 3 or 4 months.
That's it.
I mean, that's it.
I dragged you out. Andy, this is crazy. I dragged him out to, you know, one of those celebrity tournaments where I was hosting. It was for Cops. And so I emceed it and stuff. So I asked Ron to come play, and he came play. And you, I don't think you had played for weeks before that. And you came out and just, whoosh. I mean, you have such a great swing, and that's what you teach.
You know, especially when it comes to golf, the modern golf swing is completely different than it has been since the inception of the game.
Right.
There's so many injuries now in golf. Tiger Woods with the knees and the back.
Swinging so hard.
Swinging hard with the wrong body parts as well. You know, we've learned so much more about biomechanics and how the golf ball is meant to be struck, how the golf clubs are made. And it's no different than any hitting and throwing sport. If you can throw a baseball, I mean, not like a professional level, if you can throw a ball, you can be a really solid golfer.
Then why can't Bunin hit a golf ball?
Because that's called rectal cranial inversion. So, no, he's you know, he just
but
needs to
practice.
For
everyone who's listening, that's my buddy Mike Bunin, who was on My Boys with me, who won't play. We call him all the time. He's like, oh, my swing's so bad. And I've seen him with you at the lesson, and he
looks great.
You get him to hit the ball, it's his head. His head's so jacked up, he can't pull
it
together.
You know, I hate to say this because I'm in your home. If I put an L wedge in your hand right now, the likelihood of you hitting a solid shot is 50-50. Now, any other club in the bag, you can hit a 1-iron, probably 250 down the middle. You can hit a 7-iron, 175 with a nice tight draw or fade. Put an L wedge that's 50 yards, it's suspect. So everyone has got their little mental...
Oh, it's suspect. But I will tell you, it's... 90-10 now.
Really?
Yeah.
90, on which level is 90, though?
The good 90's good.
Okay.
I've been hitting it well because I listen to you.
Yeah, why?
I pulled the ball straight back. Because you know what happened? I stopped caring.
There you go. There you go.
That's you're totally right. It's all in your head. And it's so funny because I do think what you teach is so applicable to not only golf, but to all of life. And so it'll be interesting to see if that works in parenthood.
Well,
so let's go back to, so you, I mean, were you, all right, let's talk about your childhood.
Okay.
Are you, talk about your parents, siblings, how many?
I have two older brothers, my mom and my father passed away in 2012. He was in the music business from day one. He was Abbey Lane's conductor, Xavier Cougar, back in the, I don't know, 40s
really?
And 50s. Yeah. And then he started the Brat Pack, all the big celebrities in Vegas.
Yeah.
He was the orchestrator and conductor for a lot of those folks.
So was he doing the Vegas shows with the Rat
every
Pack?
We would have to fly out every weekend to go visit Dad. Because
Shut
he was,
up!
Oh, I'd be sitting back there, and all of a sudden, here's Jerry Lewis, here's Sinatra, here's... I mean, it was just like it was amazing. But at 6, 7, 8 years old,
right.
What did I know?
They weren't giving you drinks. And
not
you
yet.
Weren't banging
when I was 11, they started. Yeah, at 11 years old, they started doing it.
Sammy Davis, actually, I bet they did, actually. Yeah,
I think at 11, Sammy Davis gave me my first cocktail. Anyways.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. It is. I think it was a glass of wine. He said, hold this, kid. Who can take as I am? So, yeah.
Awesome. I didn't know
that. Claim to fame. It was fantastic. Matter of fact, I brought that up later in life when I met him again, and he oddly did not remember that, giving a minor some cocktails. Yeah, it was fun.
They usually try to keep that out of their mind.
Yeah, so they say. So, but mom was a stay-at-home mom. Dad, we kind of always grew up with Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, celebrities in the house, you know, because of being in the music business.
And were you here in L.A.?
In L.A., yeah. Sherman Oaks.
So you were a country club kid. That's how you got the golf.
No. As a matter of fact, nobody in my family golfed at all. What happened, how I found golf is I went into the LAFD and I was a paramedic. And all the guys golfed. And at 18 years old, I was pretty young to be a paramedic. But I wanted to be like one of them. So I picked up the game, and about 3.5 years later, I quit the department and turned professional. It was just...
Because here's what's frustrating is, like, you didn't even pick it up till 18.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, most of these kids on the tour, they're, like, 2 years old.
Tiger Woods started at 2.
Yeah, with his father clanging pots and pans behind him, throwing shit at him, right?
Absolutely.
Focus! I'm 3!
He was throwing keys at him, and he was making all kinds of noise to make sure he focused. Matter of fact, I think he was on the... was it the Jack Parr show or the Johnny Carson show?
Oh my God!
He was on
the Mike Douglas show. That's right.
Yeah. And it was classic. He had like an 8-foot putt. He missed it. So the second one, Bob Hope was also there. He just picked it up. Tiger picks up his ball and walks it over to the hole, puts it about a 1/2 inch away, and then made it. The way that I play golf.
Yeah, exactly. Now. Yeah, that's a gimme. That's a gimme.
Of course, it's good.
I wish I'd have played as a kid. Were the other guys the fire? So you were working with the LA Fire Department as a paramedic.
Correct.
Were they like, oh my God, you're really good. Well, out of the chute, you had a natural swing?
You know, I was just like everybody else, hacking at it, like really big, loud swing, hard as can be. I was a decent baseball player in Little League, but, you know, being in the fire department, you only work 11 days a month.
Right.
So you have nothing but time in between your shifts to practice and play. And of course, at 18, that's all I did. I had no...
Were you close to your father at that time?
Extremely close. My parents got divorced when I was about 14.
We keep more people, Andy, we talk to. It's so odd that my parents were married my whole life. And almost everybody we talk to is like, no, my parents were divorced. My parents were divorced.
My parents were together until they died, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. But what's crazy
about, sometimes it is.
What's crazy about this divorce is that we never saw them fight or argue, let's say. When it came time for the divorce, Dad got Mom a limo to take her to the airport. She moved to Hawaii. And until Dad passed, they were best of friends. It's ironic. The gentleman that my mom was dating before she married my dad, they got married. And the lady after they got divorced, and then the lady that my father was dating before my mom and dad got married, they got married. So it was this nice, big, happy family,
I think. That's like a fake movie where people go, this doesn't happen in real life.
And the movie's called Hopscotch.
Yeah. And it's like Alan Alda and Carol Burnett.
Oh, I can see that for sure. But literally, it happened that way. And
do you think that they were like, maybe they got married because she got pregnant?
No, my dad was, I guess this is in the 50s, in the Hawaiian Room in New York. My mom was a Tahitian dancer, so dad conducting, dancer, boom.
That's going to happen.
It's going to happen pretty good. And
But he was dating somebody else before that?
No, he actually was single at that time, and so was my mom. Was, I think, 19 at the time. But all of a sudden, that was that. And 5 years later, I think they got married, and then the three of us.
Yeah. Were you guys a close, tight-knit family?
Extremely.
Because really close. He was well off, it sounds like.
You know, in the music business, I guess it is with any business,
yeah,
entertainment-wise, there's not like residuals that we get, you get. But there's publishing.
Oh, you get.
Well, yeah.
That's a side gig you do on CSI.
Yeah,
was that from the paramedic stuff? That's how you ended up on that thing?
I ended up doing all the stunts that I've done through golf. Everything I've done in the entertainment business through golf.
It's crazy. Obviously, nobody knows Andy. He was the stunt coordinator on...
No, not coordinator. Just a stuntman.
Stuntman for CSI for 15 years.
12 of the 15 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was... the executive producer was a student of mine and found out years ago when I was working with Stallone, teaching him golf, Sly had a better way of paying me, which is not to pay me, but have the studios paying me.
Those were back in the days. You could just put a line item in.
That's it, and then you're in SAG. And
we'll get to, Stallone. Yeah, we'll get to that. These are the crazy.
But so, oh boy, do I have a bunch. At any rate, so you know, I guess we weren't struggling. Right. Middle, you know, right down the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And sometimes Dad would work, or months that he wouldn't work. So it's the same, I guess, in any
when he wasn't working, was he an affable guy? Was he fun? Was he like miserable when he wasn't working?
He was a first generation. He came from Argentina. So that kind of dichotomy between the old school foreigners,
right,
or
right,
Spaniards. So his relationship with all of us was like the father and the sons. And, you know, he's very loving-ish.
Didn't, like, my father never said, I love you. Was he like, I love you?
You know, up until, I guess, when he started getting around 50 years old, the L word came out. You know, it was not definitely a I love you, goodnight kiss and all that stuff. It was very old school for sure. Mom made up for it, though. Mom was just completely, you know, mom.
Yeah.
But you know, when Dad got older, he started, like, matter of fact, he said things to my brother, who, both my brothers, later in life, that, you know, I apologize for this, I apologize for that. I mean, it was great to see Dad, you know.
That's pretty amazing, because I feel like most people don't. They just ride, they go, well, I've gone this far.
Right.
Fuck it.
And keep, and but my Pops, he just...
Sounds like a pretty cool cat.
Oh, he was awesome. He's absolutely awesome. And he, so proud of me being the oldest.
Your brothers, what did your brothers go on to do?
My oldest brother, who lives in Hawaii, wanted to be a professional surfer. So he surfed his entire life. And,
a surfer, a golfer, and a...
And a choreographer.
Okay.
My middle brother lives in New York. He's right now doing a Cheetah Rivera thing.
That's...
yeah, no, he's been dancing.
What a great spectrum of crafts by the children.
And you know what's crazy is that we're all independent contractors and we're all broke. It's awesome to not have a real job.
Well, listen, Andy and I are both familiar with the...
I don't know what you're talking about.
When you're single and living in a studio apartment... Like, it's the best job
ever.
It's
awesome.
Because you don't have a job.
That's right. It's
when fantastic. Somebody's like, it's a Tuesday, and they go, hey, we should go to Vegas. We should go to Vegas. And then all of a sudden, you have a mortgage and kids, and you're like, I can't go to Vegas.
No,
I need a job.
I'll tell you, it's all of us have never had a boss. We've never had...
But your father was the same way, it sounds like.
Completely. I mean, musicians, I guess, are like actors. Unless
Even worse. It's a worse craft than
it's a tough one. I mean, I'm a better drummer than I am a golfer. I've been playing drums my entire life, and I love drumming.
Right.
But never even contemplate that doing it for a living.
So you left the fire department, and you said, you know, I'm gonna go take a swing at being a pro. And what, you did some of the tours?
Well, in the beginning, why I really left, well, that was probably 80% of the reason the golf, but I don't believe that anybody at 18 years old should be able to see the things that I saw. You know, you're just too young and too immature. So I started having some issues with what I was
as a paramedic.
As a paramedic, I think I saw things that you shouldn't see. Oh, it's pretty bad.
What kind of, like, what were some? Oh, I mean, what was the worst one?
My very first call. I was working in downtown LA, pedestrian versus RTD bus.
That's a bad.
That's kind of not a good. Yeah, and
just crushed.
I was like, you know, Johnny on the go, let's do it. I get out of the rescue and run up to the front of the bus, and literally, I mean, you see it in movies or cartoons, front tire ran over her head, and it was literally flat like you would see on the cartoons. And, you know, I wanted to be one of the men, so I didn't say anything. I just did what I had to do, pounced her dead, obviously. Got back to the firehouse.
You were trying to save her.
Oh, yeah. At that point, you know, I didn't know where to blow in the CPR. There's no holes there.
Oh, my God,
it was flat.
Dude. I wonder about that. You the catastrophic injury that happens to the body, like in a plane crash or something crazy, until you see it, you have... And at 18, I honestly, that would be upsetting.
At 18, for sure. And the way that I dealt with it, you know, when you get back to the firehouse... Remember, these guys are 30 years old, 40, 50 years old, and they've been doing it for a long time. And how they would deal, they would laugh, make jokes about it. Crispy critters, you know, with burned bodies. And, of course, I did the same.
Yeah, gallows humor.
And by doing the same, I just stored it, you know, inside internally. And since Dad was on the road probably 8 months of the year, and both my brothers at that point were, you know, 20 and 22, surfing, smoking pot. I don't know what the hell they were doing. So I had nobody to kind of debrief with. So I just stored it up. And after about 3 years of seeing gunshots and decapitations and things that you shouldn't be seeing, I just finally broke. I said, I can't do this anymore. Just cannot do it.
You know what? I didn't even think about that, because you think about El Paramedic. He's probably, it's like, you know,
you see well, some of the things. It's not.
You
think
forget
about
it's
people
the bad
in the
one.
Military. I mean, you know this.
Yeah,
kids go to war. They see the most awful.
Yeah, it's awful. And but that's your yeah. job is to go to the scene where it's the worst.
Absolutely, we would go in where people are running out. You know, as valiant and great as it sounds, and I truly believe you're either born to be a police officer, born to be a paramedic, or you're not.
Yeah,
because I certainly found out that I was not.
Well, you know, not to change the subject to cops nowadays, but it's like people, you know, you see the one or two videos of the horrible cops that do terrible things, sure. but there's a million cops. It's a terrible job.
It's a thankless job.
Every yeah. time you pull somebody over, I'm a middle-aged white dude, and when I get pulled over, I put my hands sure. on the wheel, and I don't move a muscle
sure. Sure.
until somebody tells me what to do. I mean, correct. It's like I mean, feel terrible for them because they don't. Every car they walk up to, they're like, is somebody going to shoot me?
They know, you know who they are. They have no idea who
they have
you
no
are.
Idea.
And you know, I know, and you've met some of my friends that come over yeah. sometimes even on duty. And 99.9% of the police officers are just great. Yeah. And they're fun. I mean, yes, there's a bad
I have
eggs
a
and every.
Who are good cops in San Diego, and it's the same of like, yeah, I mean, it's like any other job. There's a couple bad.
For
bad
sure. Guys. And they don't get called ever. For a nice big positive call, it's always at the worst of humans. You know, it's yeah. like my
you don't
my
call
wife.
The cops. You go, hey, we're having a Christmas party.
Yeah. Come on
it's
over.
It's a fun day. Exactly. Hey, we're out on the pool. Do you want to stop by? No, it's like something horrible has happened.
Completely horrible.
A bus ran over my head. I really need you to come see if you can put my head back together.
Please,
again.
Quick. I mean, so those kind of that. Jobs are you know people don't think of it.
Why
in
did
that
you get
term.
Into that?
I have no idea. You know, I was an explorer first. You have these little programs for police explorers, fire explorers, where you're yeah. 14, 15 years old, and you can ride along. And it just, you know,
so
it just resonated. And,
so
and
your dad was on the road a lot, though.
Oh, quite a bit.
So
quite
even,
a bit.
He's a great dad and everything, but, I mean, it seems
but he wasn't like, really around.
He's not around. Like, my dad worked 80 hours a week or something. I used to do a joke. I said he said he'd work 80 hours a week, but he worked 40. The other 40, he just sat in a car 2 miles away from the house.
Yeah.
Quietly.
Doing what?
Just quiet.
Yeah.
Just sitting quiet. Because that's what it's like when you have six kids in the house. He's
loves oh, wow. Six kids.
So, you know, it's great to be close with your dad and stuff, but do you think that he regretted being away from the family that much?
Oh, later in life, absolutely. I mean,
because I feel terrible when I go on the road away from my kids.
Oh, sure. Sure. Recently, well, last 17 years, I definitely know what you're saying now. 17 years ago, I would have no idea. But later in life, he really had a lot of regrets.
Yeah.
But he, for the fact that he was in telling us or talking to us about the regrets was so awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good guy, but you know, at the time too, he's probably just, I got to make money.
Well, that's all it was. I mean,
that's the only way to make money.
It was all old school. His yeah. job was to make the money and provide. My mom's job was yeah. to be the mother. You know, like, I guess the old school way of it. So
kind of a role model. You're kind of the same guy with your kids and stuff.
Absolutely.
Talk about how you got into, so you did the tour, you tried to get on right. and do the PGA. Those, I mean, that level is.
I played in other tours around the yeah. world. I've been in Europe and been in Asia. You cannot fathom how difficult the PGA Tour of America is. They're that good. They're really that good.
And even the last guy in the tour
is amazing.
Would destroy everybody we know.
I don't know anybody that would be able to touch the worst PGA Touring pro.
Yeah.
Mean, they're that good.
To be at the top of that level is just, it's a total mind game.
It's 100% mental.
You see them go, it's like, the guy's hitting just 25-foot putt after 25-foot putt. You're
right.
Like, how is he, after he just drove it 360?
Right. And you know what people focus on, though? The 360. And
yeah,
the two iron, you know, 250, not the 30-foot putter, the 25-foot putt. As you know, as a golfer, you know.
It's all putting.
It's all short game and putting, for sure, all putting.
I remember I shot, one of like my best scores, I shot like an 81 or something, and I had 40 putts.
That's as low as you've shot with your swing?
I shot a 79 once.
Wow.
But one time I shot an 80, and I had 40 putts.
That's ridiculous.
It's terrible.
That's ridiculous.
It was terrible. Let's not talk about my golf.
Yeah.
It's getting better. It's getting better, though. But honestly, I'd never played until I met you. And I didn't even know how to swing the club. And yeah, I'll shoot in the low 80s now. And
that's fantastic. And if you had time to practice, of course. Well, that's the thing.
And my L wedge is coming along.
Good.
So all of a sudden you're like, well, I want to be a pro. This is crazy. How did you get into teaching?
Well, at Studio City, where we go to, Weddington Golf and Tennis.
Where Jim Brown is every single day. Every day. If you want to see Jim Brown, the legend, he's there hitting balls.
Every single day.
And he's old, and he still hits the ball pretty well. And you're like, if that guy got a hold of me, he'd kill me.
Oh, absolutely.
He's got to be 75 or 80 years old.
I think he's close to 80. And the only chance we would have to not kill us is that his knees are so bad, yeah. we can at least walk faster than he could.
So
we're safe.
But
there.
If he got a hold on.
Oh, forget it. Done.
His hands are like.
One hand's like a baseball glove. But So I started there, just hitting balls.
You were hitting balls.
Just hitting balls. And one day, I'll never forget this. This is probably 2 years after. I'm maybe 22, 23. Smokey Robinson shows up at the range. And, of course, I knew who he was. So I made sure to get the stall right behind him. So I get my bag. And I had these little caps, you know, like a toy gun cap.
Yeah.
Those little red things. What I would do is I would lick the back of it, stick it on the ball, and hit it with the driver. It sounded like a bullet.
You did not.
It was like an explosion. And so the first one I would hit, and of course he turned around, what was that? Forcing him to have to look at my swing. So I hit four or five more shots. He'd turn around. I'd get another cap when he wasn't looking, pop it on there. So this goes on for about an hour, hour and a half. The very next day, and I introduced myself. He was great. Nice guy. The next day.
Were you looking to teach?
No. I was looking for a sponsor. No, forget teaching. God. I'm trying to get
Smokey,
a sponsor.
You want to give us a sponsor?
Yeah. I'm looking for some money here.
The tears of a golfer?
Oh,
nice.
Absolutely.
I like the sound of that.
Absolutely. So I'm doing this game for a good hour and a half or so. The next day, and we say goodbye. The next day, I get a phone call at the front desk, and it's Smokey Robinson. So I'm thinking, okay, he wants a lesson. He liked the way I was. He said to me, hey, baby, I want to give you 5 years to go play on the tour. No, excuse me, 3 years. I'm like, excuse me? He goes, I want to sponsor you. And I'm thinking to myself, how is that possible he would even offer that?
How would he know? I didn't even know you could sponsor people to be on the tour.
Well, that's the only way. Unless you were born with a silver golf club in your mouth, you are not making the PGA Tour.
But usually it's companies, like a shirt company or Titleist or something.
When you get to that level.
It's people.
It's people. That's it.
Really? Oh, I never heard of that.
All the people that have been, like I said, if you were born into a silver golf club, you had no worries in your mouth. Because
that's the old days. You had to be a rich country man club sport. Kid. Yeah, it's a correct. Rich man sport.
And for those of us that didn't have that kind of money, you have to have a sponsor. And there's no way a Nike or an Adidas would ever sponsor you because who are you? You're not Tiger. You're not
Until Rory. You're on the tour.
Until you're on the tour. And by that point, you don't need their money.
That's so funny.
So you would always have to search for a sponsor. So the next day, I get the phone call. And he says, come meet me at my lawyer's office in an hour and a half. And I'm driving there thinking there's no way he's going to sponsor me. Signed a 3-year contract, 150 grand a year, just like that.
That's
just
unbelievable.
It's unheard
Smokey
of.
Robinson, Smokey hearing Robinson. Hearing you hitting balls next to him.
I feel so bad.
Did you ever tell him the cap trick
of
later?
Of course I did. I had to, absolutely. I felt so bad. And he goes, it's okay, baby. You're it's good. Okay. It's okay, baby.
That
you're
what
good. Oh, yeah.
It sounded like?
My first.
Was he the coolest guy ever?
I'll tell you this much. My first professional win was probably 6 months later. I think I won $5,000. I call him up, tell him that I won, and I'm sending him the $5,000. He said, just keep it. I don't want the money. Just keep it. Have fun. I'm like, wait, I don't understand. We have a contract, and I'm giving you a certain percentage. And why keep? He goes, I'm not in this for the money. I want to tell my friends that's my horse up on TV. I mean, that's how amazing this guy is.
It's white amazing. Slavery. You are Smokey Robinson's human slave.
I would be his bitch all day.
Ah, me too. If he paid me to play golf.
Wait, I mean, he's literally the nicest human I've ever met in my life.
Awesome.
That was fantastic.
So
it was
crazy.
Phenomenal. And then through him, okay. So
did you teach? Did he ever want to play?
Oh, he wanted to play, but he didn't want me to teach.
Okay.
At that time, I was kind of hustling lessons because I didn't have money.
Right.
You know, after doing the fire department.
Hustling also on the golf course?
Absolutely.
That's weird because we've talked about that. You used to make boatloads of money. You were a tin cup.
I could literally make my swing look like a 30 handicapper. Literally. I can make it look like, but still kind of get it near
you
the
gotta
hole.
You got to beat them just by enough.
Just enough.
If you beat them too much, you'll never get them again.
Exactly.
You can't milk them dry.
So I really did my own tour in L.A., and it was bad. I mean, I was making a living hustling people.
Like, did you get on to country clubs? How'd you do it?
Oh, sure. No, it'd be a public course.
You'd have to have a shill to bring you in.
Right, so I'd have a couple of friends that are Asian guys, Korean kids, guys, and they have this game in Koreatown, and come on and play. We're going to tell them you're a 20 handicapper. Can you make it look like that? Of course I could. So we'd go for 2-3 weeks, get a couple, 5-10 grand off them, and then depart.
No, if I lost 5 grand to you, I'm definitely going on looking up your GIN number and going, you show me your handicap.
Back then, there was none of that.
There wasn't
there
any.
There was none of that.
There was no handicapping
Nothing.
System.
I mean, there was handicaps that I never had.
Nowadays, people are like, you better show me your handicap.
Everything.
Because everybody's sandbags.
Absolutely. I'll tell you those stories too. And the Hollywood folks, forget it. But so it was, you had to be careful
eventually
though.
Eventually get into kids, but I'm so intrigued by this.
Oh, no.
Good. Okay, keep going then. Well, this might be the longest podcast we've ever had. This is for me. I don't care how long goes. This is so intriguing.
It's fun. So there was a point where it was getting kind of dangerous, and I mean dangerous because these Korean folks, they whip out. And what that means is after the hole, you have to pay up right there. It's not like at the end of the round. Each hole, you have to pay their cash now. That kind of thing.
So you're, what are you, golfing with $2,000 in your pocket?
Oh, no, no, 5 to 10. And it wasn't my money. My shill or my guy that was bringing me into the game, you know, he gave me the 5,000 cash. He's the bankroll. Yeah, absolutely. And he vouched for my hand.
And you'd have to be bad enough. So you would deliberately miss the green.
I would and purposely then ship it up shank it. And I can purposely shank and top a golf ball. Oh, no, purposely, completely. Oh, no, I can snap, hook, slice, whatever you want. I can manipulate the crap out of it. So they would have no idea what my potential or what I really was. But then when they start kind of doing some investigating, hey, a friend of mine says that he saw you at that driving range. Maybe you're not the same guy. I'm like, I'm probably not. Of course, we never played with that guy again because I made sure of it.
Yeah.
Because it could get dangerous.
And you can't go hit at that driving range anymore.
And it could get dangerous.
I see you with like a mustache and glasses.
A little nose and the thing with the glasses and all that guy. But so the hustle paid the bills for a minute. Uh-huh. Then when I started going into the country club hustle, let's say, now it's no joke. Now it's, they played me to a scratch, which I was. And you bring $10,000 and that's that. Period. Now, you have to give out strokes, obviously, as a scratch golfer.
That's what I'm saying. And a lot of times, you normally when we play, the best golfer loses.
Correct.
Because everyone, like, I'm a terrible handicap, but I...
Like, what is your
We played yesterday. I had 2 birdies and an eagle.
Oh.
And I shot an 81.
Okay, so...
I had a 9.
You would probably, well...
So those holes, I would have killed people.
Oh, you demoralized completely.
Actually, and I did stroke on the eagle hole... So it was a par 4.
Dangerous.
I got a 2 for a 1.
Holy moly.
So I basically had a hole in one on a par 4 because of my stroke.
Wow.
But it's because I'm like a 17 or something.
No. You would get in some serious physical pain if you said you were 17.
They would have beat me up, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's what happened. My buddy was like, it's the last time you're getting fucking strokes.
Exactly. Oh, no. They're not going to give it to you. Yeah.
You saw me shoot a 9. I'm legitimately.
Yeah, but that's the hustle, though.
I know.
Joe Pesci would like miss a 5-foot putt. I would take him as a partner any day because he's probably a 3, but he's a 19.
Is that right?
Oh.
He's a 3, but he's a 9. Sandbag City.
Something like that.
That's so funny. All right, jump.
Okay,
so,
jump.
So all of a sudden, you played on some tours.
Yep.
But you were like, this isn't really that good.
The tours that I was playing on, I was doing good. I was making money. You can't make a living on those mini tours, no. but the traveling got to me.
Did you play on the PGA?
I played in some PGA Tour events, but I was not officially exempt on the PGA Tour.
Right.
And, you know, what's crazy about golf is that you're kind of a rock star in the golf world if you're a professional.
Sure. Yeah, it's a big deal, man.
It's big. And of course, the ladies that are into golf are the daughters of the wealthy country club members.
Yeah.
So you party and have fun, and that was my downfall.
That your upfall?
Well, I'll tell you this much. No, I don't want to end up in a hole in the desert. It was pretty awesome. I never caught a cold or anything, so I'm good.
No. So it is kind of crazy, but you partied a little bit. So how did you get into teaching then?
Well, so in 92, I believe I was in a car accident right here on Hollywood or Sunset and Laurel. And it jarred my back a little bit, nothing like a career-ending kind of injury. So, but for the next 6 to 8 months, I couldn't play, and I needed to make a couple extra dollars. So I said, well, I'm at the range here. I'll just go ahead and help some folks and see what they think. $20 here, $20 there. And then I realized that was a lot of fun to do that. Like to literally have somebody come in that's frustrated and upset and change their attitude because they're hitting it better. What a rush that was.
Well, you're at the point now where we've called you from the course and said, listen, I'm having the shanks. And you go, all right, do this. And we do it and we go, oh, okay, I'm better.
Yeah.
And you go, see you later.
How awesome is that?
But you have the swing broken down to such a finite thing that you can see everything.
And as you know, being a student of mine, my method is complete polar opposite of every method, as you know. You know, I do and say things that people would be like, no, that's like against the rules.
But that's what's great about your swing. It's like it's not a jarring swing in the body. That's the whole premise of it.
It's being very passive, very relaxed, very languid, hands and arms, and it doesn't require muscle strength and stuff like that.
It's crazy. But it's funny because, I mean, I every time I go to take a lesson, it's either Larry David before me or, I mean, just every other actor in the book. It's like...
And those folks, especially, they have to be great golfers because they're persona is so big to them. It's so important to them how they look. Sly will never play in a celebrity golf event, or he hasn't yet, because unless he looks and he can
won't
play, he won't.
But he can't.
No.
You watch the Pebble Beach Pro-Am and you see the guys and you're like, oh, that right. guy's terrible. And then they break down their swing on one of the balls and the
boy,
guy's like,
that's...
all right, listen, his swing's terrible. But here's what Peter Costas is like. Here's how you fix this or whatever.
Sure.
So
sure.
You end up teaching people. When does it all of a sudden jump off to where you're Sylvester Stallone's private golf instructor and you tour with him on a Learjet around the world?
It was awesome. It started with, believe it, after Smokey, it was David Leisure.
He was Joe Isuzu. He's Joey Isuzu.
Oh, okay, good.
I know exactly who David Leisure is.
That was my very first celebrity after Smokey. And just through David Leisure, he told one friend, a celebrity, that told. Yeah, and it was just.
I've sent people to you. Bunin sent people. Everybody sent people to you.
So then the snowball thing happens, and John Lovitz and Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman were before Stallone. And those three,
are any of them any good? Who's the best of all?
Phil Hartman, rest in peace.
He was a good golfer.
The best. Oh my God, he was a phenomenal.
Shut
golfer.
Up.
Oh, he was probably up single digit for sure.
That makes me feel amazing.
Gorgeous swing.
He's one of my favorite comedic actors of all time.
Yeah, the greatest looking swing for. I mean, he played, I guess, as a junior, but really good swing. Dana Carvey was getting better. John Lovitz should stick to tennis. Well, you've seen him at the range. He's got two left feet.
I've seen him on stage, so I'm guessing he doesn't seem... Yeah,
right. So, but every Saturday night at the end of their show at Saturday Night Live, they would give me a golf swing and say hi to Rondo Barry. I loved it.
Crazy.
There's like 100 episodes where one night they had... Phil had Ron, Dana had Dell, and then John had Barrio. You know, they're doing the Johnny Carson thing. Oh, it was such a rush. Anyways.
That's pretty
amazing. It was a big ego
thing. Yeah, of course.
But once you get a couple of those guys, then all of a sudden through that part of the industry, you get everybody.
So you started teaching Stallone, and when did Stallone just go, all right, you're with me?
Yeah, well...
you're coming with me.
He called me, which I couldn't believe it. He called me, left a message, and it was literally... He just started golf, so he'd never really been a golfer or hadn't started yet. And the second, after the first hour at Whitsitt, at that point it was 100 an hour. He said, all right, from now on, I'm giving you 200 an hour, and that's that. So he upped my rate.
I love this guy. What a negotiator. Yeah. All right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm right. giving you 200 an hour, and there's no argument.
And that's it.
I'm fine with that. That sounds okay.
So he literally got so addicted to the game
that
I basically lived with him. At 3 in the morning on Demolition Man, we're on the top of the DWP building, in between shots, hitting golf balls. I mean, literally, in his outfit or his costume, whatever, we're hitting golf balls in a net.
It's a sick sport. It's an addictive sport.
Yeah, for sure.
Because something you can't perfect, and your brain were like, I can perfect this.
And can you imagine those that are in your industry that have made it like that?
Yeah, he's used to being perfect in things.
And then there's no such thing in golf as that. So we would be in the weirdest places practicing the golf swing. And he literally, for 6-7 years, there's no way I could teach Arnold, though, because they had this little thing going. And of course, when I started teaching Arnold, boy, was there a battle there. Ooh.
It's almost a movie between.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
Where they fight over the golf ball. He's mine.
Oh, no, it was.
Go to the chopper. So you taught Arnold as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can he swing it? He doesn't seem like he can.
Here's
swing
what's
his
crazy. Okay, now.
He's too big.
Believe it or not, I'm not kidding at all. Sly, with the muscle thing. Well, so with Arnold. But Arnold had so much touch and feel, you would not believe it's Arnold swinging a golf club. It was so relaxed looking. I mean, he literally was not going for the kill.
He, like, Stallone just bulked up for movies. I mean, Schwarzenegger was a phenomenal athlete. He's an eight-time whatever Mr. Olympia. Like you see him in the early days when he's a young man,
ridiculous.
And you're like,
geez. Yeah,
physically a specimen, 6'2", just a monster frame.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. And he understood. As a matter of fact, he just purchased JFK's irons. So I actually got to hit JFK's 7-iron. It was amazing. It was unreal. It was like, forget about golf, and that's JFK's. Irons there.
He's the best golfer president of all time, right?
That's what I've heard.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. Obama's supposed to be.
That's what they say. Lying. And your job is to golf pro these guys, but it's pretty, you know the knowledge, so it's not like a tough job. You're just kind of hanging in the wings, and then as soon as the day is over, you're partying like a rock star.
Oh, it was bad. I mean, good. It was good, but it was bad.
Do you remember most of it?
Kind of.
Some.
It's some blurry.
Are there photos that you can...
Well, I've been approached at the golf, at the range at Weddington with, I'll never forget it, a guy comes up with a briefcase, $10,000 in cash, and a picture of Sly and I when we were in Cancun. I went to like 10 of the Planet Hollywood openings. So you travel around the world, open it up. And so we were in Cancun on that opening. And so the guy pulls out this big 8x10 picture of Sly and I. We're laying on the beach. And then there's two topless gals, which is no big deal because that's what they do down there. Just topless.
Listen, you know, you're talking to me. I like topless women. Okay, so listen, Andy?
I don't have any problems with that.
I don't know why he's making excuses.
Yeah, there's no excuse to be. You're in a situation we want to be in.
Well, yeah, no. You should be very nervous with that, for sure. So the guy says, if you give me the story to this picture, there's your 10 grand. And of course, you know, I told him, I didn't know if it was a setup.
Now, say it happens today and somebody shows up with a suitcase and a picture.
It better be more than 10 grand.
Yeah, maybe a little more than 10 grand.
My daughter's going to college soon, so that, yeah.
Well, honestly, I'm glad you reminded me about that because the name of this podcast is called Father Time. So,
Golf Giant Digest.
Yeah, well, Andy, we might have to do some cutting in the middle because I can't help it. It's so intriguing.
Oh, and boy, do I have stories. Oh.
No, do you want to share any?
What would you like to do? Which one? Who? Where? Why? When? I mean,
Andy?
We should pick one.
I mean, one good
one. We should pick one good one and then talk about children.
And we should talk about it. Because it'll be a good segue because you're living the life probably everybody who's listening to this is dreaming about. You're a golf pro. You're hanging with celebrities.
Traveling like,
they have stupid money. You're on a Learjet. All you're doing is playing golf. Your job is to just look good swinging a club.
There was a point where there's a big-time producer named Joel Silver.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess you guys believe.
Never heard of him.
Okay.
Joel,
well, I don't know. So the beginning of Demolition Man, he was furious that there's a golf pro on his set. What the hell's a golf? What the hell's a golf pro doing on the set here? He's doing the thing,
his finger.
And once he figured out that if Sly was hitting the ball very well that day, that's maybe he acted better. I don't know. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, where's the golfer? Let's get him in here. Come on. You know, like he switched because it's like it was so much fun when Sly was hitting the ball well that maybe he would give a better performance. I don't know. But they switched like
absolutely that. True.
Is it?
Oh, my God. When I'm hitting, like if I have a great day on the course, I come home. I'm like, hey, baby, how's everybody doing? Let me cook some dinner.
Really?
Absolutely.
It means that much, huh?
Well, back in the tour days when you had a great day and a win, weren't you like a nicer person?
No,
to be
because it could have always been better. And no, that's a different mentality though. That's
I feel that way about stand up sometimes. And the people I can crush, and I go, but that one joke I stepped on.
Really?
So you
understand?
Do you obsess over the one or two bad strokes?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's not the great.
But
shots
the best golfers have amnesia. They don't remember them.
Those are the ones that always win.
Yeah,
don't remember that
because everyone has bad strokes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's the guy who goes, I don't care, I'm going again for it.
That's the difference between that's why I teach versus do.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, it's not just that. At some point, I mean, some of those guys are freaks. Justin Johnson's a freak of nature.
For sure.
How are you going to beat him when he's taking a wedge in
and you're hitting a five iron?
It's almost impossible. You cannot beat him.
Yeah. And on a different show, I will tell you the Dustin Johnson story, which there's no way I can tell you on this show.
You'll tell me as soon as we turn the mics
off. That's right, I will.
And then I'll share it with everyone. So Stallone...
Well, here's a really...
Well, was it just crazy party stuff?
Well, here's a wild twist. My wife used to date Sly. And yeah, it's great. Great story. Susie was a Nagel model and...
Your wife is a stunningly beautiful woman. And you were the cool golf pro guy.
Which is ridiculous.
It's a great combination.
And as a matter of fact...
For wedding photos.
Yeah, sure.
But for living a life, it can get tricky at times.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Thank God for my daughter.
Do you have a crazy Stallone story you want to tell? I don't want to get you in any trouble.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of great stories. I mean, he's a great director. I'm not talking about movies.
He is a great director.
Yeah, but it's yeah, no, probably not on this show. Maybe
great. We'll talk about this later. Yeah. Well, let's jump then because did you meet her while she was dating Stallone?
No, they were dating in the mid '80s, and I met her in '91. No,
was
excuse
it just
me,
a 90- random thing, or how did you meet her?
Through a friend of mine, and then it just turned out like. Oh, you teach Sly? Well, I used to. Wow, really? You know,
okay.
When my daughter was born, the biggest basket I've ever seen of Pam, whatever, all the baby stuff from Sly. I mean, what a sweetheart.
Cool,
no, he's a sweetheart, complete sweetheart. And generous as all get out, by the way. I don't know what people say when they say that he's not. He's like so generous.
I've never heard he's not. Andy?
I don't hear a lot about him.
Yeah, when people talk to me, very, very few people talk about Stallone.
Yeah, I don't think those days are done.
I wish they would talk more
it's
about
not
him.
Not a big topic in my circles.
How about Larry David?
Larry, I talk about a lot.
Yeah, he's amazing. Another
all
great
right.
guy.
So let's jump. So you are cock of the walk.
Yeah.
You're a fucking golf pro. Do you know how hard it is to be? Well, you do. To be a scratch golfer, although it came naturally to you.
No.
Every other guy on earth, if you go, I'm a scratch golfer.
First thing you say is, yeah, right, you're full
of
shit.
It's like you're an astronaut and you landed on the moon. It's really? That, it's pretty big.
No kidding.
For golfers who are hackers and stuff, to say you're a scratch golfer, it means you are a zero, which you don't have a handicap because you, I'm looking at Andy as I say these words, because he doesn't understand.
I got no idea.
Scratch golfer means if the par is 72, you're supposed to shoot a 72. You're supposed to shoot par on every hole.
It still probably sounds like Chinese arithmetic.
He has no idea.
That part I get.
Okay.
It's the hardest thing. Most golfers are probably over 18 handicap. I would say 90%
The average handicap has not changed in the last 100 years. Like it's 30 or something ridiculous.
It's a really hard game.
Yeah.
So to get to scratch is ridiculous. So you're cock of the walk. You're hanging out with celebrities.
I'm traveling on
you're a
golf
golfer.
Jets.
You're doing every drug imaginable. Plus some.
I don't remember these.
Plus some. You're drinking like a fish.
Oi.
You're partying your ass off.
Oy vey.
And you meet a girl and you think it's just going to be, let's fool around.
Because there's no way a girl like that could hook up with me because I'm just a golf pro.
No, that's not true. So when did you, were like, let's do this, get to marriage. Let's get married.
It was like crazy. I actually, I felt like I walked up to Sly and said, hey, would you mind? Like it was her father or something like that.
Maybe. Well, you know, you don't know, but I'll tell you, but you're a good guy, you know what I mean? So go ahead and do that, you know.
You know, actually, almost like I asked for his permission, but then again, I was working with him at the time. So he's like, "Oh, she's a great gal."
Well, he was also your
boss,
benefactor. Yeah, he was your sponsor.
Absolutely,
at the time.
And but
did
at any
just
rate,
have a whole slew of people on a payroll? Everybody's on payroll.
Entourage.
It is entourage.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
And I mean, all of them that I've worked with have usually. Well, actually that's not true. There's a couple of actors. That don't, but the majority of them have a big entourage of folks.
What's funny is I'm getting more behind the scenes of actors with you than all the actors I've spoken to.
Oh, come on.
Because normally, we've talked to Joel McHale and Jason Alexander, all these actors talking about having kids, and it's so funny to hear it from
somebody that's not an actor, that's in that.
But is looking in the fishbowl to go like, yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
At that level.
They would put me on this pedestal above their producers, above their...
Of course.
You know, when I'm traveling...
You're getting a golf ball.
Oh, but that was strange to me, you know, because... not that golf is easy, but I guess once you reach...
It's easy to you.
Well, yeah, but I had to work my butt off to get there. But at the end of the day, I don't find it difficult even now. It's like I don't have to play for a year and I'll shoot par.
We just played. I saw it. You hadn't played in forever and I was like, oh my God, that swing is... gorgeous.
Well, stop that some more.
Yeah, it was crazy. No. All right, so you meet a girl. You go... you're still partying. And is she partying?
Oh.
You got... Okay.
Can I share one story?
Yes, please.
Okay, so first year, we met in September. So New Year's Eve that year, Scott Baio and I were headed to... Well, I told her I was going to Palm Springs to work with a professional out there. So she bought it. So Scott Baio said, look, we're going to the mansion tonight. So I went out and I bought a tux, the whole thing. And for all intents and purposes, she thought I was in Palm Springs.
By the way, the Playboy Mansion, I think.
Sorry.
You can throw, but the people who are listening, just so you know, it's Scott Baio, who I think he had sex with every center.
The man whore,
for about 20 years. And you're going to the Playboy Mansion.
So we're going to the Playboy Mansion. I convinced the future wife that I'm going down to Palm Springs and work for New Year's Eve.
Yeah, you're not going to get busted.
Yeah, exactly. So Scott and I walk into the mansion, and there's my buddy Phil Hartman hosting Happy New Year's from the Playboy Mansion. Hey, Ron Del Barrio, come on over. Hey, Scott Baio. So, like an idiot. Hey, how you doing, Phil? Yeah, who's watching TV at home? and this is no joke. That's exactly how it happened. So I don't even remember that night. But I guess 2 days later when I come home.
How did that night end? Playmates?
Oh, there's no question.
Drugs?
No, there was none of those. Lots
drinking,
of booze.
Lots of booze.
Lots of that. Lots of booze. No drugs, but lots of everything. You know, the booze and the
grotto? Were you naked in the grotto?
When are you not naked in the grotto?
I don't know. I've seen the grotto. I've been there once.
Oh, yeah. No, it's...
But it was an odd night and it wasn't a lot of...
Must have been like a movie night, like every Sunday's movie
night. Yeah, it was
night.
A weird night.
Okay. But... yeah, how much more nailed can I be? I'm on NBC. With
is that your
Phil
first
Hartman.
Time at the mansion?
No. I mean, well, yes. Sorry, hon. No, it wasn't at that point.
Were you hanging at the mansion a bunch?
Well, no, not like a regular or anything like that. No, not like that. But I was they knew my name, but not like not no, but no, but not like not Andy like hey left. Ron, not like you know,
hey Ron,
you know,
Ron. They don't know my name.
They don't even. No, they know my name enough to go, you're not a welcome here. You're on the not in list.
It was fun.
I hate to do this because I want to talk about kids, but listen, we got to talk about the Playboy Mansion.
We're 45 minutes
into
this.
I know we are, but I think we haven't, listening.
We
like,
haven't
please.
Brought up a child the entire time.
For the love of God, talk about the Playboy. This is. It's people are going to be like, that guy's a father? So you're hanging at the Playboy Mansion.
With Scott Baio.
Baio. So even if you get his, you know, his leftovers, yeah, he's got Miss March. You're getting Miss April.
April, right.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly right. No, that's his February, leftovers are like later, yeah, the later playmates of the month.
No, it was the best. I've never been nailed that hard. And Susie, what a great sport. We just started dating.
Nailed
so,
that hard. What a great Playboy Mansion. So when you get home.
So how was your golfing week? I'm like, oh, yeah, it was tough. You know, we were Palm Springs, you know. I didn't say much, you know. And then, of course, what a superstar that she is. She goes, you know, Linda called me on New Year's Eve, her friend Linda, and said, hey, are you near TV? Why don't you turn on Channel 4? And there's Phil Hartman looking at Scott Baio and Ron Del Barra saying, hey, Ron, listen, I took a lesson from you yesterday. Are you going to be here tomorrow? Because I really need a tune-up. And I'm not putting these two things together that I'm on national TV. At the Playboy Mansion, I told my future wife that I'm in Palm Springs working with a pro. So as soon as I love her. She let me off so easy. We've only been dating 3 or 4 months at this point. She goes, you know what? Don't even come up with excuses. I saw you on TV, and it's okay. It's all good. You know, we just started dating. And I'm like, I almost cried because it was so like she's amazing. Crazy. Oh my God. That's
so how long after that did you get married?
The next day. No, I'm kidding. probably within, 5 years.
Oh, wow. You dated for 5 years before you got married.
Yeah.
And the whole time you still were like tearing it up, going crazy. You know what I
mean? Oh, no. Once Susie and I started dating, then I kind of took myself off the market.
But you were partying like a monster.
Stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, Tommy Lee, Molly. I mean, it's Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, I forgot about the Tommy Lee.
Oh, how about
stories.
The Eddie Van Halen stuff? Oh.
Yeah, I mean, who? The list of clients you've taught.
It's
Tommy
it's,
Lee, Eddie Van Halen,
Joe Pesci, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Costner.
Costner's a good golfer.
Now that's another one. When he was filming Tin Cup,
yeah,
he had never golfed before in his entire life. But he was wanted to be a professional baseball player when he was growing up. So when they wanted him to become Tin Cup, Ron Sheldon was the director, telling all the pros, you know, we have to make him look as if he's been golfing for 20 years. So when he and I started working, I had to give him kind of the old school swing, you know, the 1 o'clock right field, not the method that I teach.
Right.
So we worked for a year getting ready for the Tin Cup movie. After the movie's done, now he loves golf now, and he wants to get into it. And I couldn't change him back to my method. We worked so hard. So sadly, he's a good athlete, but he can only hit a drive like 230 because of the old school swing.
Shut up.
And he doesn't have enough time to actually fix it.
230.
I mean, you hit your 5 iron, 4 iron.
I hit
iron
a drive
like
yesterday, 317.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
No, I crushed it.
No, I've seen you.
Listen,
I shanked
the approach shot.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Was it the L wedge? Was it the L wedge?
Yeah, I think it was my sandwich. I think I shanked the sandwich. All right, so listen, just jump. Andy's like, kids. We're
okay,
talking
kids,
about kids.
Kids.
You might have to come back for a second episode. Your daughter's beautiful. You get married.
So we get married.
You're still teaching. That's what you're doing for a living.
Still teaching, and we get married.
Your daughter,
Nicolette Marie. She was born
what happened?
In
how
1999.
Did it change your life?
Oh my God, how did it change my life?
Or were you
it
terrified
is my life.
Just kept partying your ass off?
No, I mean,
did you clean up?
of course I did. Absolutely.
But you still, you know.
Well, I'm still going out with the. Sure. I'm still working.
Yeah.
You know, and Susie, being in that business as well, she understands. I mean, sure. It's not like what it was before we started dating, but she'd always wanted to have a child, Susie. And as a matter of fact, I had no say in the name. She had the name picked out since
my wife
1967
the exact same.
Or something.
My wife
like
knew the exact name.
Yeah. I had no say, and matter of fact, it was like...
It makes it easier, actually. Once you kind of give in and you go, look, because when you're beginning, you're like, I want to make some choices. And then it gets to a point where you're like, actually, it's much easier if you just make all the decisions.
That's bad. Yeah,
and then you go, oh, actually, why am I trying to make decisions? My life's way easier if I just sit back.
And that's what I've done for 20 years now. In L.A., being married for 20 years is a big deal.
It's pretty crazy.
Right?
It's a pretty big
deal.
Nuts.
So I've just used that
Talk about having a kid and what you like, because obviously your dad was a cool guy. And were you similar to him? Were you? Did you learn lessons from him? Do you? Were you? Did you want to be home more?
Well, when Nicolette was born, or when she can actually understand what life was, I wanted to be the dad that. I mean, my dad was fantastic. He was a great father, but old school.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be that. So I've always made it a point to be. It's a fine line between being her best friend and her father, you know, that kind of dichotomy.
That's the question. Where is that line?
Where is that line? And thank God, whether it be luck at 17 now, I mean, we have the best relationship. But when she was born, it was like all new to myself and to Susie. We had no idea.
Were you terrified?
Completely. Completely terrified. I mean,
did you have some crazy experiences where it was like emergency rooms or like, oh my God, the terror of?
We were so completely paranoid. I mean, Fort Knox was built around the bed every night. I would sleep on the floor in the other room so that Nicolette could have the big bed part. You know, we had a bassinet.
Because you're afraid to sleep, to roll over on the bed.
I sleepwalk and roll, so yeah. I couldn't sleep in the same bed with her at all
because
I was
paranoid.
That's
funny because we had the baby in the middle, which you're not supposed to do. But my wife's like, no, that baby's sleeping right here.
Oh, yeah. No, when later on, like when she was probably a year or two years old, she was definitely between us.
Yeah.
For sure. Oh, absolutely.
Both of my kids still sleep in the bed.
That's fantastic. I think it's great. Because
my wife's like, who cares? I want the kids in the bed with
me. That's
it. I know. But they need their own time.
Okay, I get that. But now, did both of your kids breastfeed?
Yep.
Until what age?
One.
Not three and a half?
No. She breastfed for till three and a half.
And every person that we told, oh no, that's so wrong, and you shouldn't.
That's really interesting. I've heard of. I mean, there's people like breastfeeding at 10, right?
You've seen. Oh, I've not heard that, but
I've heard that. Andy,
have you?
Andy doesn't know shit about kids.
I don't know anything about kids.
No, so there's been like crazy people who have breast. You know, the kid's like at 11. He's coming home from school and going, yeah, let me get a quick top off to see how the day's going.
Top off, real good.
We did a year with the first one. I think the second was only like 6 months, and my wife was like, yeah, I'm done with that.
You know, and whether it be for comfort, for Nicolette, for what, and you know, the doctors were saying, well, don't let anybody ever tell you it's wrong, it's right. You know, they get more of the immune system from the mom.
They all definitely
that,
don't
some
get
good
sick.
Positives. Yep. And of course, we stopped telling people because they had the reaction. Be like, what?
Three and a half.
That's way too old. What are you, nuts? That's crazy.
I would never. Here's the other thing I learned as a parent. I don't judge anybody else. So
well, we know.
I get so pissed when other people judge. I go, dude, you don't know shit. No, you know what's funny?
Right.
Nobody knows shit about
nobody
what
does.
We're doing.
Nobody.
That's what's funny about like people who are like, oh, I'm such a blah blah blah. This you, nobody knows anything.
What do you know?
Nobody knows anything.
Right. Exactly.
And nobody who knows what's right.
Some doctors will say that's a great thing. Some they'll say it's so. I don't think anybody knows.
Free food.
Right.
How much
how
money
that?
Did you save on the bill by not having to buy formula?
How about that?
Damn it.
And she's never had formula. She's never had formula. Ever.
Never had formula. At all.
Never.
Our youngest one still. She's like 20 months, and she still has. She'll have a baba before she goes to bed. Baba.
Nice and warm?
She
or
goes,
is it just kind of...
Baba.
Oh, she does.
Baba.
Top
like,
off, Dad.
Like it's like she's ordering a schlitz. Like, yeah, baba. Baba would be good.
I'll take a baba. Thanks. Thanks, Dad.
were you guys overprotective, do you think?
Oh, my God. No, yeah. It might as well have had a helmet on and elbow guards and knee. I mean, we were overly, you know, looking back on it right now. Of course, it was paranoia. You know, what do we know?
It was a constant fear, especially when you have an only child, right?
Exactly.
You have one kid and you're like, Jesus, man.
Exactly.
I can't screw this one up. I only got one.
No, exactly. And at that point, it's not like I was rolling in money, but I definitely did not want her to work 24/7 mom, stay home. I don't want anyone else raising Nicolette, which...
Was that a major... Because, I mean, for me, I remember turning down jobs before I had kids. I would be like, yeah, I don't want to do that. And then as soon as I have kids, I'm like, yeah, what's
I need to do that. Right,
I have to do that. Yeah.
Well, it's...
It must have been terrifying to be then a freelance contractor.
It was tough, you know, until Eddie Van Halen came in the scene, which was amazing. Yes.
We're back to stories.
But we'll go to that in a different...
Is he... he's not a good golfer.
Pretty good. He's probably a...
You know what he does really well? Plays guitar.
Yeah, that thing with strings,
very
right?
Very well.
Yeah, I've heard.
How is he still alive? Seriously.
You'd be quite surprised on what a health fanatic he is.
Now.
Even back in the day, he would not be, you know, okay, never mind. Anyways.
So we can't tell Van Halen stories.
Yeah, but on a different show.
Yeah, on a different show.
You know,
Van Halen stories.
No, I got all kinds of good stories.
So luckily, he came along and he was a good money.
And, you know, he came up to me. I was teaching. This is 2000. And I went on tour with him in 95 on the Balance Tour, teaching him golf. So I went, you know, I don't know.
You just watch their concert every night?
At one point, I just didn't stay at the hotel. It's like,
but wait, your baby was at home. And you were on the road with Van Halen.
This is 95.
Oh, this is before.
So I was on that tour with him. So in 2000, after Nicolette's born, he shows up at the range one day just out of the blue. Hey, what's going on? Oh, I haven't seen him in probably 2 years at that point. And he said, what are you doing right now? I'm like, I'm teaching. And he goes, no, what do you want to do for a living? He goes, well, of course, I want to play on the tour. What do you think? All right, you're done teaching today. I'm like, well, what do you mean I'm done teaching? You're done teaching today. What do you need? $1 million? $1.5 million? I'll just write you a check right now. I'm like, shut up. Come on. No, I got a daughter now. And this is really, you know, a responsibility. He goes, and he literally cut me a check and said, you're done teaching. We're going to play golf for a living. I mean, I'm lucky as shit. I mean, I can't even tell you.
That's insane.
So from like, I have to work a certain amount of lessons just to feed my child and my wife.
But
to,
you were
like,
were you trying to get on the tour again?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
In 99.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it was like.
And so he gave you a giant check and you just went and practiced every day.
3 years worth. So we, for 3 years, he, you know, kept practicing, working on the game, golf wise.
Did you make it up back on the tour?
Not to that level, no.
No.
No, because...
At that level, though, because, those kids are 21 years old and they're fearless.
Oh, absolutely, and they're fearless. And they, yeah, but the problem is that I'm hanging out with a rock star. So...
Oh, that's right. He likes
that,
to party.
That likes to party. So,
but from what I've heard, he likes to drink a little bit.
No, come
just
on.
A scooch. A scooch.
Yeah, that was... Yeah.
How many bottles a day was he drinking at that point?
I used to have spares at the house.
And you were sitting next to him. What was his flavor?
Red.
Johnny Walker Red?
No, red wine.
Oh, red wine?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he wasn't.
Nothing worse than a red wine hangover.
No, he had the perfect cure for the hangover. Just prolong it. So he,
it's called cocaine. Is that what it's called?
No, you just prolong it. You just keep drinking. So there's no
hangover. Oh, there is no hangover.
Yeah, none at all.
I forgot about that cure.
No, he wasn't like a big hard alcohol guy.
Yeah.
Wine, but.
I really like red wine, by the way.
Yeah, those hangovers suck, don't they?
So you had a baby at the time.
So and he'd had one.
And you were partying with Eddie Van Halen and playing golf all day. Was your wife like, "What? Where the fuck are you?"
No, she's like, "Just keep the fucking money coming. It's good."
Oh,
you know, she was Susie was so being mom.
But did it affect? Here's the other thing: I feel like babies affect your relationship.
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, my wife, you know, she read something that said, as soon as the babies come along, they don't need your affection anymore. Like when you're dating, that woman needs your affection to feel whole.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, two kids give her all the affection my wife needs. And she's like, well, you're okay.
I'll tell you what.
But we don't need you anymore.
It's almost as if somebody said, if they could have fast forward and shown me a video of what it's going to be like after a child. I don't know. It's because it's 100% correct. It's
I like, love your honesty.
Now they don't.
It's so true.
It totally is. Now that they don't need yours and you don't need
But the love you get from your child, too, I love my wife, but I'm also like, I mean, my love for her, it doesn't pump me like the,
right.
But when the two kids come running over to me in the night, I'm like, I start to tear up.
It's everything. No, yeah. And so that, those years that it was like, kind of like, all of a sudden I'm single again, not dating wise, but single, like I have no affection.
It's almost worse, you're single, but you really can't, because you got a wife and a kid.
I'm a wife and I'm married, but you're right, Nicolette, just completely filled whatever gap that was when she became older.
Are you still, I mean, you were kind of like your dad where you weren't around.
In the beginning, I wasn't. And what's great, every night Nicolette and I walk for an hour, every single night.
Tonight, nowadays.
Oh, tonight.
She's
17. Oh, yeah. We've been doing that for a couple years now.
Yeah, I remember.
And we debrief, and we are like the best of friends. We have such a great time. But, you know, we also get into some deep conversations about the pursuit of happiness in life and everything else. And, I'm getting back kind of what I thought I was lacking from my wife. And I guess that's maybe every relationship.
I feel like you're spot on.
I mean, the fact that you're saying it, at least it's happened to you.
And it's so funny because I'll talk to other people and they won't have the same honesty. And they get guarded.
Why?
Because we're all afraid to talk about these things.
Why? It's life.
We're all going through the exact same thing, and yet,
right.
You know, you read Facebook or whatever, and everybody's like, everything's so great.
Oh, bullshit.
We're all so happy.
Yeah, bullshit.
And those people, like, join a cult and all kill themselves, and you're like, what the fuck?
Right, exactly. No, you know? But it's the truth. I mean,
we're all terrified, and we're all, you know, worried about the world, and especially once you have kids, you're like,
oh, my God, that's the worst. Man. And I really felt like my wife was having an affair on me with my daughter, because I had nothing after my daughter was born, like literally nothing.
So that does happen though. I mean, did your wife have any postpartum depression where she was like,
sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I made the major mistake, which fucked me for years to come after that, to not give her a piece, to not take the baby for a day, to not, you know, so she can go out and just.
So at that time, you really, yeah, like I remember.
I'm scared shitless. Year, you know, I can't take care of, I mean, I would not let her leave because what if she wants the boob? What am I going to do? I can't, she's going to start crying. I can't stand her crying. I mean, I'd be paranoid like crazy.
Yeah.
Like nuts. But
it's nice that you guys have finally come full circle in that, you and your daughter. Because here's, I bet your daughter, when she talks to her friends, is like, you know, my dad's a fucking cool kid. You're a cool guy.
You know,
your stories are great, but also you're just like the first time we took lessons, I just hit it off. I was like, I fucking like this guy. I came home that day and I was talking to my wife going, took a golf lesson.
Golf lesson.
This guy. I walked up to you. You were teaching somebody else. It wasn't even a celebrity, I think. You were just teaching some lesson. But I liked I just sat and listened to you for like a half hour and I loved your approach.
Wait. You sat and listened did you pay me?
No.
Okay, just checking. All right.
No. Andy? We're at 1 hour. Oh, Andy's reminding us we're at 1 hour. But no, here's what's going to happen is that it'll be less. We'll cut out some of my rantings in the middle. It's just so intriguing to me. Here's the thing is I end up doing the show and I talk to a bunch of actors. And a lot of them are famous and they have a lot of money. And, you know, parenthood, when you're financially secure and everything's golden.
What is that like? I mean, I would really like to know what that's like.
They still have their problems, but it's crazy. Yeah, you know, they don't have the problems of normal middle Americans that we all kind of have where it's like we're trying to put it together.
Have you ever been in the position or situation to know what it's like that money doesn't buy you happiness, but at least you have it? Have you been in that spot before? Because I've never been in that spot where, like, I'm comfortable and I can relax for a minute.
I mean, I was comfortable, yeah, for a while. Because I don't spend money. To me, every time I spend money, I'm like, that's money I have to earn. So before I got married, I was working as an actor a lot and I had a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, you know, we had kids and that's right. Bought a house. And,
sure.
Everything's gone. So yeah, it's all the same. All right. Listen, this is amazing. Let me, I always wrap it up with a couple questions at the end.
Fabulous.
You're going to have to come back though, dude. I'd love to hear some crazy.
Oh,
we have, there's three more episodes with this.
I feel like it, right? Ridiculous. Well, we talked about, and honestly, we've talked so many times about doing a golf show, interview show, where Ron's the pro. It's like a foursome, and then Ron's the fifth who kind of comes along. He guides us through this journey, and we learn a little bit about golf, but we also learn a little bit about life.
And I will say that all of the celebrities that I work with, they have all helped me Access Hollywood Entertainment Tonight, my video. So they're very nice to.
Well, here's the thing. They could have anybody they want to teach them golf.
It makes me feel good. Yeah.
And they choose you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And that's why rdbgolftips.com. I mean, seriously, anyone who wants to, I've sent guys to you. Anybody who wants to learn how to play golf should come find you online.
And there's videos out there too.
Golftips.com. You have a ton. You can watch the videos. You can watch the swing. Here's what's great about your swing. It's not, you know, you're not Rory McIlroy trying to swing out of your hips, because as we get older, that you can't do that anyway. I don't have the flexibility.
Right.
It's this nice gentle swing that maximizes the torque of the club coming through. It's pretty crazy. All right, let's enough golf. I love golf so much. I want to talk about golf. Well, that'll be the next podcast. It'll be the Golfcast.
Golfcast.
What is one thing you hope your daughter never finds out about you?
About me?
Yes, about you. What is one thing you hope she never... Just one.
Just one.
We'll limit it to one thing you hope she never finds out about you.
That I've been winging it the whole time. Literally. Because I have no fucking clue.
I get surprised every time that came out so quickly, and I couldn't agree with it more.
Really?
I feel the exact same way.
Have you?
Yeah, because I've just flown by the seat of my pants.
Have
my
you
whole
said
life.
It? It's the first time I've ever said it. It just felt kind of good.
It felt so natural. I hope she thinks I had a plan.
Right. That kind
never
of
never had a plan. I've been winging it completely. My entire life.
And scared shitless doing it.
I also hope my wife doesn't find out.
Oh, you're done now.
People sometimes go, yeah, you're really working. Like Carlos, we were talking to, he's like, yeah, you're always working. And I go, no, I'm not. I'm trying to get through each day and sit down with a glass of wine and watch TV. That's really all. I want to go golf, play cards with my friends, have a couple drinks, get up, start it again.
What's wrong with that?
Dude, if I could do it over, I'd be a trust fund kid. I really just want the money.
Oh my God, of course.
What is one trait that you hope Nicolette gets from you?
I would say being open enough to understand people. To not judge a book by its cover, you can say those lines.
To
give the benefit before the doubt, protecting yourself at the same time, but to see the best in people, not the worst.
That's a great, that's a good, I'm so impressed. Everybody you know, comes up with real, that's good.
But that's everything. I mean, her happiness is my life.
Well, it's funny too, because I feel like this generation's getting jaded more than our generation, because you watch the nightly news and the top six stories are the worst stories you've ever heard.
Unbelievable.
But they're one in a million. One in 35 million. Like, yes, it's a terrible story. Something horrible happened. But that's not the norm. The norm is positivity, and that's the abnormality.
Yeah, but our society is about that.
That's
it's
all we
about
talk about.
Shock.
Did
about
you hear the news? What's happening?
And
well,
hear
in Jersey, that one thing happened with that one kid in that park, and you saw it, and it's like,
and
yeah,
we
that's an anomaly.
Right, and we didn't have what the kids nowadays have. We didn't have social media. We didn't have remotes, for crying out loud. Forget social media, just a remote for the TV. So what information are they getting? Because it's a billion times more than we ever got.
Way more.
And so, and plus, you know, I guess it scares me.
Talk about
actually.
That a lot, about the fact. Were you, did you guys limit Nicolette's TV?
You know, we didn't. We did, not only did we not limit it.
We encouraged it.
Yeah, stay there. Shut up, kid. Stay in front of the TV.
My kids watch way too much TV, and some people make me feel bad about it. And I go, you know what? TV is so educational now, and it's better. Listen, I still read to them, and we play music, and we do other things. But yeah, they watch a lot of TV.
Yeah. Well, Nicolette is a 4.0 student, and she's never had any limits on the computer, her little games. And she's learned so much from social media and the internet. It's it's like a great education.
Well, you can, you know, people go, I'm not going to let my kids use an iPad. And you're like, well, then that's their textbook in high school. So I don't know what you're going to do.
That's right.
And kids are making millions of dollars off of it. So how am I going to keep that away from them?
No. And plus, this is just my parenting, is that whatever it is, if it's marijuana, alcohol, I want her to do it at my house. I want her to do it and ask me.
Has she done it yet?
She has.
She drank.
She had a sip of a beer and a sip of a wine. And
has she smoked pot?
She tried it once and hated it, but
she'll try it again.
We're that close. I mean, she may do that, but we're so open that she knows to ask me, which is awesome.
I agree with you. Other people have said no, and I've talked
to
people.
They're going to do it
anyway. My sister won't tell her children what she did. She went to Woodstock. She did crazy shit.
Yeah, I mean, they're
I'm
going to
tell
it.
My kids and go, hey, here, because that's your gene pool.
Right.
This is your genetic makeup. This is how we react to alcohol. This is how we react in certain ways, and it's gonna happen to you. So I couldn't agree more.
And I would rather it be safe in my home. And Susie and I are the same. You know, I don't smoke marijuana. I just don't. But
wait, it's because both your hands have a beer in it.
That's right. Or a shot of whiskey.
A
shot of whiskey. You know, something, but
there's no way to hold a joint.
Yeah, how can I do that? But Nicolette, and it's not even something to be embarrassed about. She knows, hey, Pop, can I have a beer? Can I have a glass of wine? We're that open.
I couldn't. And it's 17 in France. It's like, why are we such prudes about the whole thing?
That's
about
the
alcohol?
Thing. This
it's
country,
crazy.
Of all countries, you know,
know
and
it's nuts.
They're going to do it anyways.
They're going to do it anyway.
So why not in a safe environment and being supported about it?
Yeah.
Of course, I tell her it's not good. It's bad for you. It's this, it's that.
It is.
But at the end of the day,
it's good in moderation.
It is what it is. I mean, if she had asked me what I've done in my life, it'd be embarrassing.
Yeah, me too.
I mean,
if I told some crazy
stories,
it'd
be scary.
It would be.
Yeah.
Luckily, there weren't photos back then. All right, here's our last question, and I'll let you off on this. What's one word of wisdom, like a mantra, that you would leave? Not one word, but one. You know, if you had a little poster over your bed that you wanted to share with her to go through life. You've already said a couple, I think, that could be usable. But, you know, like, you know.
Don't stop learning. I mean, it Ooh, just be open
that's
enough.
That's a new
to
one, Andy.
Just don't stop learning. That's a
good one.
Or as Journey says, don't stop believing.
Yeah, exactly. Some of that too.
A little different.
I do think. I think don't stop learning is a great one, because we, especially at our age, we start to see people and they're like, I think my dad did. My dad was like, I'm done.
Right.
He reached a point where he was like, yeah, I did it. I'm out.
Right, right.
But he still had years to go.
Sure. And our generation, compared to our fathers and mothers, you know, progressively gets, it's different. Everything's different. But if she can just be open enough to learn, to continue to learn and to accept and you know, be kind. Just
and
stuff like that.
I love your other thing. See the positive in people.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's hard to remember to do so. That is it. Ron Del Barrio, thank you so
thank
much
you,
for joining
friend.
Me today.
Thank
my
you for
buddy
me.
Andy Lerner, producer and engineer. Thanks
Always
for
fun.
Thank
being
you,
part
Andy.
Of this. And if
thank
you... if you're in Los Angeles in this area and you want to learn how to play golf, Ron Del Barrio is always at WhitSip. You can find him online at rdbgolftips.com. Go watch some of his videos, because honestly, you'll learn a bunch just watching some of the golf swing videos.
Thank you.
And
Better, if you're not in L.A., fly him out.
Yeah.
On that's a Learjet.
Thank you, Andy. Yes.
And awesome. Have him work with you.
Listen, the hourly fee. Not only are you going to learn how to play golf, but you're going to hear some crazy Eddie Van Halen stories that are stupid.
It's only $200 an hour.
It's only $200 an hour. Honestly, for golf, that's pretty cheap. Ron, thank you so much. Andy, I appreciate it. That is it for this episode. We will catch you next time here on Father Time.